So last week we did the Bugatti plan, we went through that piece. We looked at the credibility part, we're saying how can you build credibility. We looked at the timelines, the 10 years activity, quotes. We looked at the boxing knockout. We did a thing about bowing to people as they came in. I asked you to do a dual task. One was to picture a bullet in your head. Another one was to draw a map of the mind. And then there was a couple of others. Now, firstly, do the Bugatti one. That sort of feeds into some of the stuff we touched on today. I border into My Name Is Nobody. And Simmel's idea of a doorman. The idea that once we possess these things, then suddenly we cease to be nobody and we are seen. Now, this also feeds into some stuff that Theodore Adorno wrote on fascism and this idea of why these regimes come to work is because we identify with these powerful people or these powerful leaders. We come to see them as idealized versions of ourselves. And so it's almost as if this car comes to represent, once we internalize all these values, the very desires that we want and aspire to have. There's also to do with a diamond. I'm not sure if anyone's seen that piece from 1994 in Frontline, a documentary on diamonds, where they explain that diamonds have absolutely no worth. And yet we imagine that these gems have, you know, infinite value. Why? Because it's marketed into our mind that these are a precious commodity. It's, you know, a piece of coal crushed together. So even if you think of it at a very logical level, it's obvious it has no value. But if you can hold the market together in such a way, you control the, not even scarcity, but production of things, their flow, then of course you can dictate the price which they have. So same with a guy, you know, tin, a box, it's a box, 1.5 million car. Okay, the other stuff was to do with the credibility task. I'm not going to touch on that. Okay, the idea of bowing to people. Why we did that was two things. Firstly, Neela Fuller says that when he went to China, when he was serving in Korea, when he went into a barber, the second he finished his hair, everybody got up, they bowed for him, and he left. And he said that stayed with him all of his life. And so whilst you were coming in, we were trying to recreate that partially, this idea of being seen, everybody is seen. So again, playing on the idea of being nobody and becoming people within the space. The other thing as well, it sort of had two sides to it, because John Gattel talks about the bell at school. You could be set buried in an activity that you believe to be so important, but then this bell goes and it's like, alright, get out, next class. Gattel talks about that interruption giving you the idea that what you were previously doing has no value. So we're playing on two themes, one of Neely Fuller's idea of being seen and the other of Gattel's idea of being interrupted. The thing about the bullet and the mind, I think quite a few people would have been confused by that. Why, if we did the bullet task, first of all, that was feeding off some of the ideas of Childs Eisenstein. He was saying, when you picture a bullet, you probably just pictured it floating in space, perhaps, or if not in your mind. But he says he gets people, his students, to picture an object in, I think he just says, picture an object floating in space. And what you naturally think about is something like a crisp packet of Mars or something ridiculous like that. But he says the way in which we picture the object as floating, isolated in space, it shows that we think of space as separate as opposed to space being connected to things. So that's about how we actually conceive of stuff. Whereas the theme about how can you picture, can you draw your mind, that's from Thomas Sass, the author of The Myth of Mental Illness. Sass says that everything takes place in the mind, and yet where is your mind? Your mind doesn't exist. You can't point to your mind. This is a reification almost. It's something that we make up. Not a fiction per se, but it's an imaginary concept. So I was sort of using some of these academic works, with these works by people and trying to put them in this dynamic context. So we take away the whole idea that these are cryptic people that we need to be buried in libraries to study, but we can engage in their work by doing these existential activities which allow us to fully entrench and engage in the stuff that they put forward. And yeah, I'll leave it there. There's a few other stuff such as the thing to do with how could you irritate people and how do we annoy people. That was to do with simply being conscious of the impact that we have on others. And it was also to do with human needs. As those lists that you wrote, A lot of the stuff would have probably been around themes of the value you have as a person, and things to do with autonomy and meaning, and how other people sometimes abridge those things. With that, I'm going to leave it to Mez to play the hard talk piece. I'm as interested as you are.
This is the only reason it jumped to me is because it's the first time I heard the word decolonial uttered on BBC by you know, your household BBC figure. When he said it, I almost jumped out of my bed. Like, what? And Ngugi Wa Thiong'o is a very well-spoken, soft-spoken person. He's not, you know, hard talk. It's called hard talk for a reason, right? Hard questions, not allowing you to answer it in your way and pushing the guest. And that's, I always kind of lamented that Wa Thiong'o is actually more on it. But he destroys the very notion that Gavin Esler is trying to propose. So they're talking about languages. That's why I thought I should play this.